This is Jay Sekulow with breaking news. Iran's Revolutionary Guard commander threatens the United States Navy.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
President Trump says he has ordered the Navy to shoot down and destroy any Iranian gunboats harassing U.S. ships. This threat comes as U.S. Space Command says Iran has successfully launched its first military satellite.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
I like that the president warned an adversary. That's what he's doing. He's providing a warning. If you want to go down that path, we will come, and we will come large.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the broadcast. We've got a lot to talk about. I'm coming to you, as I mentioned yesterday, we're trying to continue to improve the technology as we work on the being able to broadcast remotely, which is exactly what we're doing right now. So I'm coming to you from my home studio. Now, Iran has initiated a military satellite, first time they've done that. On top of that, military leaders in Iran have also stated that they will take action against the United States. Now, I want you to understand what we're talking about. Whether it's the Strait of Hormuz, whether it's the Mediterranean, whether it is the Persian Gulf area, these are international waterways. And what's happening right now, and I think it's important for everybody to understand, is Iran is trying to provoke the United States. They've done this previously, by the way, as you know, because they did it when they did what? They took U.S. Navy soldiers, Jordan, actually brought them into Iranian custody while we were negotiating with them on the Iran nuclear deal.
That's right. That was under the Obama administration, and the Trump administration's pledge to never let that happen again. And President Trump, after last week's provocation, which the U.S. Navy actually released the video of, these Iranian Revolutionary Guard gunboats really coming into very close, almost contact with our warships in international waters in the Persian Gulf. We were not in Iranian waters. There was no allegation by Iran that we were inside their waterways. This was international water, and they got very close, very provocative. And, of course, we're always concerned that if and as these commanders, our commanders talk about, and captains talk about, that if you move, you know, a little bit one way or a little bit the other way, you could end up with a serious accident, which could lead to an extreme escalation in the Persian Gulf with Iran. But because of these provocations, President Trump tweeted out yesterday that I have instructed the United States Navy to shoot down and destroy any and all Iranian gunboats if they harass our ships at sea. Now the Iranian Guard commander has threatened back. Now, he did not come back, interesting enough, with as strong of a threat, because they know what would happen if they fired first upon our ships. Our ships are much bigger. Theirs are fast gunboats, if you watch the video, but our ships would take their small boats out in a matter of moments, seconds.
Yeah, let me ask, we'll bring Skip Ash in the next segment of the broadcast. We've got our senior military analyst and heads up our international law group, has a retired colonel in the United States Army. We're going to talk to him about what does this all really mean? What does this say? We're going to talk about, of course, the situation with the vote fan scheduled for today, right?
Yeah, the vote's scheduled for sometime between 4 and 5 o'clock Eastern time, Jay. They're going to get through a debate and a vote on this new select committee for oversight that they already had the authority to do. But the key vote to watch for, Jay, shortly before the dinner hour on the East Coast, I do expect it to pass, but I think sometime between 4 and 5 o'clock this afternoon.
Yeah, so there's a lot to talk about. Also, don't forget, we're in a matching challenge. So those of you that are able, let me encourage you to support the work of the ACLJ.org is the easiest way to do it. Give online. Any amount you donate, we get a matching gift for. Let me also say, and this is important, we're really working hard to make sure this bill that should get passed this afternoon contains the right language, so we don't have any more of these attempts to basically put the Green New Deal in a package that's supposed to be being an economic stimulus for the American people. So understand we're looking at that very carefully and working very hard on that. All right, we'll take your calls at 800-684-3110. Skip Ash will be joining us next.
It's a critical time for our nation and our world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important. And during this time of uncertainty, there's no better way to support the ACLJ than through online giving. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow.
We truly appreciate your financial support. Without it, it would be impossible to do our work here and around the globe. And the best way to support our work is to make your financial gifts online at aclj.org.
Online giving, simple and secure. And by making an online gift, your support goes to work immediately, enabling the ACLJ to defend human life, to stand up for our good friend Israel, to work to uncover the corrupt deep state in Washington, and so much more. Make a difference today. Support the work of the ACLJ online at aclj.org. Every dollar makes a difference. Give today online at aclj.org. For 30 years, the American Center for Law and Justice has been dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of you, we've seen great success in the courts and Congress concerning the issues that matter most to you and your families. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow.
Our decades-long commitment to the Constitution and the rule of law is at the center of everything we do. The bottom line, our work could not take place without your generous support.
Now more than ever, during this time of uncertainty, the ACLJ needs your support. Consider making a gift online at aclj.org. Donating online is safe and secure, and an online gift at aclj.org can be put to work immediately, enabling the ACLJ to continue the battle against abortion giant Planned Parenthood, to protect Christians facing persecution, and so much more. Every dollar makes a difference. Stand with the ACLJ today. Support our work online at aclj.org.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the broadcast. We're coming to you on radio. You're hearing us just like normal. If you're watching us on Facebook, TV, or Skype, or whatever social media platform, aclj.org, I'm coming to you from my home office. Fans in our offices in Washington. Skip Ash is joining us by phone. Andy Economo will be joining us in the back half hour by phone as well as we talk about a topic involving the FBI. And Jordan is coming from his home studio. So we're using all this technology to try to keep everything as current as we can. And so far it seems to be working out fine. All right, I'm going to go to Skip Ash here. Skip, the Iranians have launched they've launched a military-grade satellite. We need to know what that means. And B, the significance of this upping of the rhetoric, at least, with the Iranian national, their Revolutionary Guard and their Navy. Start with the satellite.
Okay, the satellite would be significant, not so much because of a satellite, although that's significant in and of itself. It's significant because of the launch vehicle to get the satellite into orbit, which would be a dual-use system that could be used for intercontinental ballistic missiles. So this is where it's really significant. Having a satellite has some significance, but they're in effect testing their rocketry and their missilery to make sure that they could possibly build an intercontinental ballistic missile that could reach Europe, possibly the United States at some point in time. So that is that to me is the critical thing, plus the fact that even doing that violates a UN Security Council resolution. So the Iranians are again shaking their fists in the face not only of the United States, but of the international community and the United Nations.
So what's the significance of that, though, Skip? I mean, the fact that they're doing that, violating UN resolutions, there's supposed to be this nuclear deal, so to speak. What does this actually mean under the law of war, the law of armed conflict? Is there any violations there?
Currently, there's not, because they're not using the technology in a militarily significant way. But the reason that the Security Council operated was because they have threatened to do that in the past, and therefore this just makes them it much more likely that they'll have the capability if they ever should decide to put either a conventional or a possible nuclear warhead on one of these things, and therefore that would up the ante considerably. So it's a dangerous provocation to the international community, but to the best of my knowledge right now, it has not violated the international law of armed conflict.
All right, Jordan, let's do this. We've got a call coming in on this exact topic on line two. Let's go ahead and take it.
Sure. Let's go to Jerry in Rhode Island. Jerry, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hey, Jerry.
Hello, team. Hello, team.
Hey.
Glad you guys are setting an example for all of us on the distancing. In regards to the Navy thing, I'm sure the two colonels who have been through the War College, and our War College is all prepared for this, so we're not supposed to be scared. They prepare us for this. But I believe the tweet from the president is like a shot across the bow, the old terminology. So, therefore, if the Navy does take steps, which Trump will do because of the drone example, he's going to take affirmative steps. But by him doing the tweet, it also puts on notice, hey, Democrats, media, we gave them a shot. If they push, we're going to push back. And that's what I think. That's what the tweet is about.
Skip, what about that? I mean, the president responded quickly, actually, you know, saying because they've done this before, the Iranians. I mean, they have actually done this. I mean, they have taken sailors captive. They were doing that while they were negotiating a supposed deal.
Absolutely. This is a warning to them, a shot across the bow. I think the Iranians are doing this for a couple of reasons. First of all, they're testing to see whether the president has been weakened by virtue of the COVID-19 crisis right now going on in the United States, and whether his attention has been drawn that way to give them some leeway to commit mischief in the area. And at the same time, I think what they're doing is they've done two things which has drawn the United States' attention. They're harassing our warships in the Persian Gulf. They fired this missile, and then the president just announced that they have intelligence that there may be some attack planned to take place against some U.S. asset in Iraq. So it seems to me that the Iranians are shaking it like a magician. You know, they have one hand moving over here. We have this with your Navy. We have this with the missile launch. And over here is where the actual event may be about to occur. And I think the president has sort of put the kibosh on that by saying we're aware of that and we will take decisive action, even if it is not directly Iranians, but maybe one of your proxies. We will hold you accountable for this. So he is saying, I can bounce a number of balls at the same time, and you're not going to get away with anything against the United States.
Let me ask Fan this. Is there a reaction coming out of Washington yet? I mean, I know they're engrossed in this other issue, which is the getting this bill through. What else are they looking at? Have they talked about this?
Yeah, those who are on the relevant committees have, Jay. I mean, the attention of the main bodies are on the COVID response bill. But I saw Congressman Matt Gaetz basically reiterate a conversation that we had on this broadcast yesterday, that the Iranians better believe this president because he is one that will follow through. And, you know, Jay, I think just the general reaction is that, you know, provoking has always been what Iran does best. Their bark has always been very fierce. The goal from Washington should always be to limit their capacity to bite, to respond. And that's what made that infamous nuclear deal so problematic. But, Jay, I think the 180-degree change between administrations better be received by the Iranians. The general response out of Washington is that, unlike previous administrations, if they continue to provoke, if they continue to cross red lines, the United States won't back away. The international community, Jay, they might. I think Skip is right about that. The Security Council probably doesn't have a strong desire to intervene in this. But I think this administration and the United States leading the world, I don't have much doubt at all that if the Iranians continue to cross that line, he's going to follow through on exactly what he said he would do.
Jordan, if this is, as Skip mentioned, this idea that we're dealing with a pandemic here and they're trying to see if the president can be distracted, he's proving them wrong very quickly.
Absolutely. He took the immediate action by not only instructing the Navy privately, but publicly putting Iran on notice and the world on notice that if you do this again, I've given the green light already to our commanders, to our captains of those ships to fire upon those Iranian Revolutionary Guard fast boats that are harassing our boats. So the response back from Iran, from the head of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, Hassan Salami, he said, quote, "We have ordered our naval units at sea that if any warships or military units," and I love how they say this, "from the naval force of America's terrorist army want to jeopardize our commercial vessels or our combat vessels, they must target those American warships or naval units." They're talking about defensive measures, if you notice there. We're talking about taking offensive measures against their risky behavior and harassment.
I think that's exactly, and I think that's exactly right. And so, Skip, what is this, a war of rhetoric right now that we're dealing with?
I think it is right now, but I will tell you right now that when the president gave that order and said for the Navy to be prepared to do this, the commander-in-chief of the Central Command area, which is in charge of that area of responsibility in the world, which is the Persian Gulf and the greater area around there, he and his naval commander, you know, he owns all the forces, you know, from all services. He and his naval commander getting together and determining exactly what the rules of engagement will be and to make sure that everybody understands those. And the president, I think, has just loosened them up considerably. So we'll have to see whether the Iranians are going to try to, how far they're going to push to see if they get a reaction.
Let me ask you a last question, Skip. So the president gives the authority to the commanders. Then what happens in the chain of command?
Okay, when the president gives this authority, the chain of command really goes down through the Secretary of Defense, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, to the combatant commander. In this case, it is the CENTCOM commander-in-chief, because this is in the world is divided up for the United States. We've divided up into various commands that have responsibilities for certain parts of the world. In this area, it would be the Central Command that has responsibility for this, so it would be the commander-in-chief of CENTCOM. And then the CENTCOM commander has an Army component, an Air Force component, a Navy component, a Marine component, and in the Persian Gulf, it also has a Coast Guard component. And they would get together and then determine rules of engagement. So that's, I'm sure, they already have these things worked out, but they're refining them right now in accordance with the president's directive.
You know, it's an interesting aspect that in the middle of the pandemic, which Iran has been hit with, by the way, you would see this increase of the war of rhetoric. But as Skip just told you, once the commander-in-chief under our Constitution, under Article 2, the president is the commander-in-chief. He's the sole commander-in-chief. So the Army and Navy, the Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, all report through their chains of command. But ultimately, it goes, as Skip just said, it goes to the president of the United States. This president can handle a pandemic and can handle warmongering by the Iranians at the same time. All right, we're taking a break. We're going to come back. We'll take some of your calls, 1-800-684-3110, switch to some of the pandemic issues. We're also going to get into the FBI in the next half hour of the broadcast. Andy Economo will be joining a senior counsel for the ACLJ. We encourage you to share this with your friends. Jordan's going to let you know how you can support the ACLJ.
Folks, go to ACLJ.org. This is a matching challenge month. You can double the impact of your donation. So if you're financially able to right now, it's a great time to support the work of the ACLJ. Our lawyers across the country doing their work. This radio broadcast is brought to you because of those donations. And you double the impact of your donation today at ACLJ.org. Donate online.
For 30 years, the American Center for Law and Justice has been dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of you, we've seen great success in the courts and Congress concerning the issues that matter most to you and your families. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow.
Our decades-long commitment to the Constitution and the rule of law is at the center of everything we do. The bottom line, our work could not take place without your generous support.
Now more than ever, during this time of uncertainty, the ACLJ needs your support. Consider making a gift online at ACLJ.org. Donating online is safe and secure, and an online gift at ACLJ.org can be put to work immediately, enabling the ACLJ to continue the battle against abortion giant Planned Parenthood, to protect Christians facing persecution, and so much more. Every dollar makes a difference. Stand with the ACLJ today. Support our work online at ACLJ.org. It's a critical time for our nation and our world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important. And during this time of uncertainty, there's no better way to support the ACLJ than through online giving. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow.
We truly appreciate your financial support. Without it, it would be impossible to do our work here and around the globe. And the best way to support our work is to make your financial gifts online at ACLJ.org.
Online giving, simple and secure. And by making an online gift, your support goes to work immediately, enabling the ACLJ to defend human life, to stand up for our good friend Israel, to work to uncover the corrupt deep state in Washington, and so much more. Make a difference today. Support the work of the ACLJ online at ACLJ.org. Every dollar makes a difference. Give today online at ACLJ.org.
everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. I want to wrap up the Iran section by playing a soundbite in a moment here. That kind of sets up, really sets the stage for where we are with this situation, with this war of rhetoric. Take a listen to this.
I like that the president warned an adversary. That's what he's doing. He's providing a warning. If you want to go down that path, we will come, and we will come large.
That's General John Hinton. So that's where that is. Now, I want to make the pivot because, again, the Iran situation is brewing. We'll keep an eye on that. Skip Ash and his team are monitoring that situation. No violations of the law of armed conflict yet. No violation of UN charters as we see it. But we are evaluating that. We'll keep on doing that. But we're also getting calls on the legislation front. And in the second half hour, let me encourage you to share, if you're on Facebook and Periscope, share this with your friends. We're going to get into some revelations out of the FBI that I talked about from my home office directly to some of our Facebook folks, but never got to share. And we're going to be live, obviously, with our radio audience. So we'll get into that. But first, let's go to Than Bennett. Where are we on the extending the benefits for the PPP?
Yeah, the House is in session right now debating the measures that they're going to vote on today, Jay. They started with a measure to establish a select committee to provide oversight of these funds. They'll be voting on that here sometime early this afternoon, and then sometime shortly before the dinner hour. My guess is in the 4 o'clock hour, sometime between 4 o'clock and 5 o'clock. They will be voting on the extension of the PPP and the related stimulus package. Jay, it's taking longer than normal today, which is saying something in Washington terms, because they are going in to vote in groups of 60. So they're trying to keep their social distancing. They're wearing masks and gloves. But they have two main votes. It won't be the first one that people see early this afternoon. It'll be later this afternoon, and it is expected to pass overwhelmingly. I would expect the president will have it signed by tomorrow, and every indication from the Small Business Administration is that those funds will be flowing. They will be receiving new applications again as early as tomorrow. So I would just say this, if you're a small business owner out there and you have been turned away because the funds were exhausted, that statutory cap is about to lift, and it's about to have $310 billion more poured into it. So have your applications ready. Have your relationship with the banks ready. Starting tomorrow, that money is going to start flowing again.
Very good. All right, let me do this. Jordan, let's go ahead and take some calls. We are taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110.
I do have one question for Than before we do that I think will help people, is that do we expect the House and Nancy Pelosi to be trying to slip anything else into this? It was 25 pages in the U.S. Senate, very clear, easy to understand. Are we expecting the House to do anything, pull any kind of hijinks, and try to slide any other funding in like they did the last time?
Yeah, so it's a good question, Jordan. The 25 pages that you're talking about, I'm holding in my hands right now, all marked up with the relevant sections. And the short answer to your question is no. They're going to take up the Senate bill as passed and approve it. So for today, we look good on that front. But I'm glad you raised it, because they are already starting discussions, negotiations, and then sort of maneuvering on the next package. And Jordan, I'm just going to tell you, that's going to be a very large package. A lot of it are going to be very important pieces, similar to what we see in this legislation, directly related to the coronavirus piece. But I will guarantee you, Jordan, just based on the chatter I'm hearing, the items that you're talking about, they're going to be on the table again. So we're already gearing up for that round. And here's what I will guarantee you. The 25 pages I'm holding now, that will be nothing compared to the bill that we're going to be pouring through for what they're going to call round four. That wish list from Speaker Pelosi, Jordan, that's going to be back on the table for that round.
All right, let's go to the phones.
Yeah, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Judith in Arkansas on line four. I know a lot of people are dealing with this situation, and I think every day, because we have new listeners, we want to answer for folks. Judith, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I love listening to you all every day and getting good information. But my question is, my husband and I both, we get a Social Security check by direct deposit, but we also file income tax, but we don't pay tax and we don't get a refund. So consequently, our deposit information is not on the return. And I've gone in numerous times to check our status, like get my payment for the stimulus check, and it keeps coming back payment status not available. So I just wondered, you know, I've listened to you talk to
a lot of people
times.
Are getting that. And Judith, a lot of people are getting that. And we are being asked that question. Let me go to Jordan and Than. There's a straightforward way to fix that for you. Have you filed your 2019 taxes yet, Judith?
Yes, I sent it last week.
Okay.
So they may not have gotten it yet.
And that doesn't have your prop. Did you owe anything or did you not? It had no tax info,
no
bank. Okay. No bank information. All right. So Jordan and Than, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that, you know, again, we tell people be your own advocate here. And Than, if you get Social Security via direct deposit, you are supposed to get this stimulus check by direct deposit and not have to take any additional actions. But if you're concerned, you can take additional actions. So she did file the tax returns for 2019. She can also fill out the form at irs.gov.
All of that's absolutely correct, and I suspect she will get her stimulus by direct deposit since that's what she gets through Social Security. Treasury did a very good job using that information. But Jordan, I would just echo that advice. I would tell her to do two things, even though I suspect she probably is getting it here shortly. I would click the button called Get Your Refund Status at IRS.gov. That's the one where you check the status. I know she said she did this. Just make sure you're pushing the right button. We are hearing from some people that are clicking the wrong one. It's called Get Your Refund Status. And Jordan, the other thing I would say, even though I think she's going to be okay, we're talking about hundreds of millions of payments that are being processed. There will be a certain error rate. If she thinks that she is one of those that there was an error processed, go ahead and fill out that form, the non-filers form. IRS may not be thrilled with me for saying that, but look, if we're at this stage of the game and you have not received your direct deposit, even though you should have, I think it's probably time to fill that form out.
Let's, Jordan, try to do one more call before the break. Thomas has been holding for a long time.
Yeah, Thomas, appreciate you holding on from Texas on line one. Thomas, welcome to JSecio Live.
Hi, Thomas.
Hey, thank you, guys. Sure. So with the governor being a Republican in Texas, Abbott, who I trust very much, our mayor is a Democrat, and I really know nothing about him, Eric Johnson. So When the governor announces rules for reopening, which I'm glad I'm in Texas for that reason, and in Dallas, they said the county commissioners listed a safer at home order now until May 15th, which they originally wanted May 30th. Is there any pushback with my mayor being a Democrat and the governor being a Republican?
No, just to be clear, the local governments have a very significant role to play in this. For instance, in some states where the governors are loosening some of the restrictions, although Georgia, the governor's getting, you know, some pretty serious pushback because they think it may be very premature. But if the local mayor, if your mayor of your county says, we're not ready for that yet, that local mayor's ruling will stay in place, as we think it should. That's why we have national governments, state governments, and local government. The best one to evaluate the needs of the local community are going to be the local mayor. And that's happening across the United States. All right, we're here for another 30 minutes. You know, if you don't get the broadcast, it's on SiriusXM. Most stations carry the full hour, but also you can go over to Facebook, Periscope. We're going to be joined coming up with Andy Economo, senior counsel for the ACLJ, some developments on the FBI and the Horowitz report that have now been unredacted. We're going to get into what all of that means. Also, support the work of the ACLJ, if you're able, at aclj.org for the matching challenge.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., JSecio Live.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the broadcast. On the first half hour, here's what we discussed. We discussed the situation with Iran. The naval commander for the Iranian Revolutionary Guard has issued a warning to the United States. The president has issued an order saying that if the Iranian naval groups try to interfere with the United States and international waterways, they can take those ships out. In other words, we're not going to allow a situation which happened under the Obama administration where our Navy seamen and women are going to be put in a situation where they could literally be held hostage as they were during the negotiations for the Iran nuclear deal. The Iranians took naval a small flotilla ship, and took those people, our Navy seamen, and put them basically in prison, waiting for some negotiations. Now, this president's not going to allow that to happen. So these international waterways are open. They're supposed to be open, and they're going to be open. And they can. This right now, as you heard from our senior counsel and former retired Colonel Skip Ash, this is a war of rhetoric right now. Now, wars of rhetoric can change to wars, conflict very easily. So you want to try to avoid that, but we're not going to allow that situation that took place previously. Then we also talked about the status of the legislation on the second phase of this, really phase three of the stimulus. So, Than, let's go right to you. Where are we with that? Then we're coming up. We're going to be joined by Andy Economo on a very interesting development coming out of the FBI and the Department of Justice. But go ahead, Than. Where are we with the legislation? Update everybody here at the top of the broadcast.
Yeah, Jay, this is the legislation that provides more than $480 billion to replenish the stimulus funds that were created a couple of weeks ago. The Senate passed it by voice vote a couple of days ago, and the House is in session right now debating two measures. This is the most significant one of the two. Jay, out of that roughly $483 billion total, $310 billion will go back into that Paycheck Protection Program. So small businesses that were not able to get the loans that will convert to grants if used for qualifying expenses, if they did not complete the process before the money was exhausted, this will allow them to complete that. Jay, the vote in the House is expected to occur between 4 and 5 o'clock. It may take up to an hour or two because of social distancing guidelines that are in place. But every indication from the Department of Treasury and Secretary Mnuchin is that they are ready to roll as soon as the president signs that into law. So again, small business owner out there, if you were not able to get in the first time, your chance is about ready to reopen. Get your applications in order. Be ready to go. I think starting tomorrow, you're going to have that opportunity.
So, Jordan, this is a good development for the American people. There's no doubt about it.
Absolutely. And the fact that it's finally getting to a point where it's pretty smooth operating, it looks like they're going to take the 25 pages in the Senate and adopt that in the House. And you know, they're using social distancing, so it may be a longer vote tonight. But again, this is another big influx of cash to the employers to keep their people on the payroll. It's also important the way they structured it this time to make sure that smaller and mid-sized banks have more resources available so that they can grant more loans. So that if your small business deals with a small or mid-sized bank, they will have more money to allocate through this legislation once it does pass, hopefully today, and is signed by the president. So this, again, it will keep people on payroll or allow those who didn't get it the first time to get it the second time because that money ran out pretty quickly, I mean very quickly. And as Than has said, this is actually a pretty good indication of how the federal government can work at its most effective level. Usually the bureaucracy is slow and they do about $30 billion of these loans a year. They're now doing almost $700 billion of them in just a matter of weeks getting them out. So the bureaucracy can work when you have good executive management, and the president and his team are doing just that. Support the work of the ACLJ. Donate online at aclj.org, our matching challenge month of April. It's a great time to support the work of the ACLJ. Double the impact of your donation. Keeps the broadcast on the air. Keeps the lawyers at work. aclj.org.
It's a critical time for our nation and our world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important. And during this time of uncertainty, there's no better way to support the ACLJ than through online giving. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow.
We truly appreciate your financial support. Without it, it would be impossible to do our work here and around the globe. And the best way to support our work is to make your financial gifts online at ACLJ.org.
Online giving, simple and secure. And by making an online gift, your support goes to work immediately, enabling the ACLJ to defend human life, to stand up for our good friend Israel, to work to uncover the corrupt deep state in Washington, and so much more. Make a difference today. Support the work of the ACLJ online at ACLJ.org. Every dollar makes a difference. Give today online at ACLJ.org. For 30 years, the American Center for Law and Justice has been dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of you, we've seen great success in the courts and Congress concerning the issues that matter most to you and your families. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow.
Our decades-long commitment to the Constitution and the rule of law is at the center of everything we do. The bottom line, our work could not take place without your generous support.
Now more than ever, during this time of uncertainty, the ACLJ needs your support. Consider making a gift online at ACLJ.org. Donating online is safe and secure, and an online gift at ACLJ.org can be put to work immediately, enabling the ACLJ to continue the battle against abortion giant Planned Parenthood, to protect Christians facing persecution, and so much more. Every dollar makes a difference. Stand with the ACLJ today. Support our work online at ACLJ.org.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the broadcast. FBI repeatedly warned the Steele dossier fed by Russian misinformation. In other words, that Christopher Steele himself was getting information for that dossier. Who from? From the Russian government. That he was being used by an oligarch. All of this known to the FBI. And despite that, they went for a FISA report. Now, this was first reported. So how this came out was that it was unredacted. They unredacted the Horowitz report. So I'm bringing in our senior counsel, Andy Economo, to talk about this. First of all, Andy, the Horowitz report has been, which is the inspector general, has been unredacted. Let's tell everybody what that means.
Unredacted means that portions of it that were blacked out, that we could not see before, has now, at the request of Senator Johnson and Senator Grassley, particularly two footnotes of it that are of critical importance, has been made public. In other words, what was blacked out and not made public when the report first came out has now seen the light of day. That's what unredacting means.
So as you look at the unredacted report and read the analysis that's going on, obviously there were some things we already suspected. We knew that, first of all, the Department of Justice has now admitted that two of the FISA warrants should never have been brought in the first place. But now we learn that the information about Christopher Steele, that even Bruce Orr, the then fourth ranking DOJ member, told the FBI and DOJ officials, this is not reliable, there's political animus, there's political bias. But what was the biggest takeaway, or the two biggest takeaways for you when you looked at this?
Well, the biggest takeaways for me, Jay, was that the FBI falsely represented to the FISA court that it had corroborated evidence in Steele's dossier with two senior Russians in Moscow, and that absolutely was not a true statement. They had not done that. And furthermore, that Russian disinformation tainted this entire dossier. It was tied, the information in the dossier was tied to Russian intelligence. Steele is a liar. He lied about how high he was in the British Secret Service. He was not a high-ranking official. He was a moderately placed official in ranking. The salacious claims of the president and a Russian prostitute were also Russian intelligence misinformation. And the one thing that really bothered me, Jay, was that Steele had contact with five Russian oligarchs, And it was recommended by the Russia, by FBI officials on a lower level, that he undergo what's called a validation review. In other words, look at him again, because he may not be what he says he is, and he may not be telling the truth. That was not completed until after the FISA warrants were obtained. The president has been put through the hell of a two-year Mueller investigation, my takeaway is, for no reason whatsoever.
So I want to go over that one again, Andy, this validation review, because no one's really talking about that, and you've had experience with this as a former U.S. attorney. And, of course, the entire Mueller probe is basically based on all of this. We know that. Now the underpinnings of that are being completely cut out. But what does this validation review mean?
Validation review means when you've got a source that's acting as a conduit for information to you, and you suspect that maybe that person is not being forthright or is giving you false information or is giving you information that is not really verifiable information, and you're relying on that information, you need to do a validation review. In other words, you need to look at him again and make sure that he is the source that he is representing himself to be. That is, that he is a valid, reliable, credible source of information. And it was recommended by the FBI's lower echelon that a validation review be conducted of Christopher Steele because of contacts that he had had that were unusual contacts, okay, with five Russian oligarchs. That did not happen until after the FISA warrant was issued. So the FBI said, I don't want to look at him. I just trust him. I'm going to go forward. And this was probably at Comey's urging, I am sure. And I'm going to rely on his lies and misinformation and make that those representations to the FISA court and get these warrants, regardless of the fact that our lower echelon of people are telling us, be cautious and validate him again.
Jordan, what do you think this means for the history of the, I've got my own theory, for the history of this whole Mueller probe? I think it just completely, again, undercuts it for the fourth time, but in a way that is devastating.
Yes, I mean, it's been undercut so many times, and each time we get more information, more unredacted information, we realize how bad the actors were at the top level of the FBI, how deceitful they were, the knowledge that they knew that was wrong, that they were basically taking information to the FISA court and lying about the president and lying about people like Carter Page and using people's information. When you get into this and you realize that those who we thought in the past were somehow CIA agents or working for foreign governments came up in no records at all, not even negatively, in any kind of intelligence records, that Masoud and the George Papadopoulos and all that matter was totally self-created, it appears, by the FBI to try and go after President Trump and his campaign. We also have learned that they went and did actual, not just this surveillance by phone and tech of Carter Page, but they actually did a real investigation into his apartment, into his belongings, into his hotel rooms. I mean, they were really violating his rights without any real legal justification. And I think the more we learn about it, the more we realize the president was right. It was a witch hunt from the beginning. They didn't care who the information came from. They didn't care if it was made up, completely lies, fed to them. Actually, what was interesting about this was we were told, you know, this was all about Russia collusion, and it ends up that the FBI and its informants were colluding with the Russians.
Yeah, so, Andy, here's another one that to me, I look at the time frame. I've always been interested in what the time frame here is. So in June of 2017, just as Mueller's appointed, just as his investigation is getting underway, the FBI is told by our intelligence community, they get a report warning again, this time that two persons affiliated with the Russian intelligence service were aware of Steele's election investigation in early July of 2016. Of course, this, as our friend John Solomon writes, raises the possibility that he had been targeted for misinformation by the Russians. Again, none of that comes out in the Mueller investigation. In the Mueller report, none of that is there. Andy?
No, it isn't. Mueller has an agenda here, Jay. I hate to say it. A man of supposedly great astute knowledge and, you know, the John Adams of the modern-day John Adams in his cleanliness and godliness. But he and his subordinates had information that they simply suppressed because of their zeal to get this president charged with some sort of crime. And that's exactly what they did. They disregarded this information. They disregarded the stuff that they should have been looking at that was given to them by the lower echelon of the FBI. And they forged ahead. And as I said earlier, put this president through hell for over 2 years in an investigation that should never, ever, ever have been commenced.
When we come back from the break, we're going to answer your questions on the legislation. But I wanted to do this segment because I want you to know that the work of the ACLJ, what our lawyers do through our FOIA litigation, to get to the bottom of what's happening within our government. And here you saw it, and you really saw it firsthand. The nature of the abuse, it's just being uncovered. I've got one last question for Andy, and that is, we know that John Durham, the U.S. attorney in Connecticut, has been charged with getting to the bottom of this. I believe he does. And as Bill Barr said, if in fact there is illegality, people will be held accountable. That's the way it's supposed to work, Andy.
It does. And I think John Durham is a career prosecutor. He's a man of the highest intelligence and respectability and integrity. I want to emphasize that. The attorney general said that what had happened to the president, both as a candidate and as president, was a travesty. It is a travesty. And I think John Durham is going to get down to the hardcore, granular evidentiary facts and show that it was. And I trust that he will do that.
All right. Very good. Andy Economo, senior counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, coming, as we all are, remotely to you. We're going to keep bringing in our experts. We're going to have to do it remotely as we work past getting through the virus here. All right, we're taking a break. Last segment, we've got six callers all waiting. We're going to try to get to all six. So we're going to move in a rapid fire round coming up, dealing with your questions on the PPP. Ban again in 20 seconds. That should be voted on today, correct?
Voted on today between 4 and 5 o'clock. The vote will take a couple of hours, Jay, but by tomorrow, that program will be up and running again.
All right, very good. Don't forget, if you're able, support the work of the ACLJ. We're in our matching challenge campaign, and donating online is just a lot easier for us, as you can imagine, to process. You do that at aclj.org. I want to thank those of you that have participated. It means a lot. aclj.org. We'll be back with more of your calls, our answers, when we come back from the break.
For 30 years, the American Center for Law and Justice has been dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of you, we've seen great success in the courts and Congress concerning the issues that matter most to you and your families. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulo.
Our decades-long commitment to the Constitution and the rule of law is at the center of everything we do. The bottom line, our work could not take place without your generous support.
Now more than ever, during this time of uncertainty, the ACLJ needs your support. Consider making a gift online at aclj.org. Donating online is safe and secure, and an online gift at aclj.org can be put to work immediately, enabling the ACLJ to continue the battle against abortion giant Planned Parenthood, to protect Christians facing persecution, and so much more. Every dollar makes a difference. Stand with the ACLJ today. Support our work online at aclj.org. It's a critical time for our nation and our world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important. And during this time of uncertainty, there's no better way to support the ACLJ than through online giving. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulo.
We truly appreciate your financial support. Without it, it would be impossible to do our work here and around the globe. And the best way to support our work is to make your financial gifts online at aclj.org.
Online giving, simple and secure. And by making an online gift, your support goes to work immediately, enabling the ACLJ to defend human life, to stand up for our good friend Israel, to work to uncover the corrupt deep state in Washington, and so much more. Make a difference today. Support the work of the ACLJ online at aclj.org. Every dollar makes a difference. Give today online at aclj.org.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We're taking your calls, 800-684-3110. Jordan, let's go in the order that people have been holding.
Absolutely, and people have been holding on the line for a long time. We appreciate that. Let's go to Diane calling from Vermont first on line three. Diane, welcome to JSEC Yo Live.
Thank you very much, and thank you for all you do. And I had a question on the 60-day delays for the green card. That person has been to college in Boston last summer. She married a guy from Vermont. She's been here since. And does it apply to her that she has to wait? She had already applied for the green card, and she was supposed to get an interview in April, but because of the lockdown, they pushed it back. Now, does the 60-day apply to her also,
so
or not?
Here's the question. She's not going to be removed from the country then. I think it's important to point that out. That's not the idea here. But as far as the processing of the green card, that's an open question, I think, at this point. Dan, what's your read?
Yeah, I think that's true, and I actually think this falls into one of the criteria that's exempt. I've got the order in front of me, and I think her category would adequately meet one of the definitions. But, Jay, even if it didn't, yes, you're right. There's not going to be a removal. It's just a suspension for 60 day of new green card applications. So the fact that hers is already in, I think it means she's out of it altogether.
Yeah, and let me say this also, Diana, to just alleviate your concern. Those interviews are probably going to be postponed again in light of the virus. So I don't think you have anything to be concerned with. This is a measure that's been put in place temporarily to try to resolve a particular need. Jordan, let's go to the next call.
This is a good question. Erla from Oregon on line six. Erla, welcome to JSEC Yo Live. You're on the air.
Hi, Erla.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, by the way. I understand we're not going to be taxed for the stimulus money that we're supposed to get, but are we going to be taxed for the $600 extra we're getting per week on our unemployment?
Well, that would be, Jordan, subject to the normal taxation of unemployment benefits. If unemployment benefits are taxed in your locale, you know, sometimes on the state level, it's different than the federal level. Jordan, go ahead.
Yeah, at the federal level, unemployment receipts, so money that you take in through unemployment, is just like if you were getting a paycheck, and it is taxable. So, again, if you're getting unemployment right now because of this and you qualified for it and you're getting, you know, your normal rate, you do need to start withholding because you will have to pay taxes on that. And again, if you owe taxes, if it's enough to where you would owe taxes, you will need to pay taxes. The IRS code kind of works from this big theory that you pay tax from anything that you receive from whatever source you receive it from. And unemployment counts towards that. So you do have to pay taxes. The simple answer is you do have to pay taxes on unemployment when you receive it. And, of course, that changes depending on how much you're getting. So some people, their unemployment may keep them below the line of even having to pay taxes. Others who may be a little bit higher earners are going to have to pay some taxes on it ultimately when they file for 2020.
Very good. All right, let's go take the next caller in line.
Yep, we're going right in line, right in order. So let's go to Emmanuel in Texas on line two. Emmanuel, welcome to JSEC Yo Live.
Hi, Emmanuel.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much for taking my call. I have two quick questions, one about the stimulus and one about the green card. The stimulus, I received a stimulus with my family. And my mom, she is a SSI receiver, and I put her as a dependent. Is she going to receive it or not?
She will not, because if you listed her as dependent, then she would not receive it.
That's correct. She would not be eligible to get her own stimulus, and since she's over the age of 16, you would not get the $500 credit for her as well.
Right, right. But the tax benefit of that, Emmanuel, is probably bigger than that anyways. But then go ahead with your second question on the green card.
Yes, sir. I came as a refugee. I'm a Pakistani Christian. I want to thank for that to all the American people. God bless you all. I applied for the green card in August 2019. Will I be receiving the green card, or is the whole
process? Yeah, this is not going to impact you, and it's a temporary stay. I mean, everything's being delayed because people are working remotely. By the way, we have an office in Lahore, Pakistan, defending Christians. Jordan could talk to that in a moment, but no, you'll be processed as normal. As normal has a new definition now because everything is remote, so everything's taking longer periods of time.
Yeah, that we do. We have a full office in Pakistan that works on all of these kind of cases. And in fact, most of the time, the office in Pakistan is dealing with criminal cases where there's an acts of violence or criminal charges brought against Christians because of things like blasphemy or apostasy. And so, again, the work there, all of this work that we're doing at the ACLJ around the world continues during this virus. And I think that example from Iran earlier in the show, how the provocations have started again, it just shows you that, you know, the work continues and the persecutors continue to try and persecute. But a great call there. Back to the phones we go. Mike in Pennsylvania on Live 5. Mike, welcome to JSEC Yo Live.
Hi, Mike.
Thank you guys for everything that you do. I work for a small business in Pennsylvania, and we got a loan. My wife's in charge of payroll. They're basically saying that the money in the small business loan is supposed to be used for whenever we go back to work. Now, some of us that are in the company are receiving unemployment. Some of us are not. My question is, one, is this a loan or a grant?
It's initially a loan, Mike. So there are parameters. You're supposed to be using it for personnel and some overhead items. And when your company applied for the loan, there was an allocation of a particular amounts that were given for each. They capped employment number values at no greater than $100,000 for personnel per person, but that's per person. And it has to be utilized for those specific purposes to be extinguished and become a grant. So it starts as a loan. It could become a grant, but you have to go through that process to get it there. I hope that helps.
All right. Let's get to another phone call. Mary in Mississippi on line one. Mary, welcome to JSEC Yo Live.
Go ahead, Mary, quick.
Hi. I'm asking a question about the stimulus check. Okay. I went to get my payment, and I put in the information, and it asks for your Social Security number, your address, and your date of birth, and the zip code. So when I put it in, it takes me to a page that says that my check was deposited in my account. It has April the 15th, but it has my Social Security number, my last four digits of my Social Security number as my account number. I was going in to put the information.
Well, did you know, were you able to determine if, in fact, the money was put in your account?
No money been put in my account. I have checked it.
So there was that meant this really quick here. We only got less than a minute left. That meant there was an error on the deposit. You need to go into the website and fill out that form and notify them.
Yeah, I think that's the answer, Jay. You need to go fill out the form newly. They probably had the wrong information in the wrong box.
It happens. Hey, Mary, thanks. I don't think we have time for Karen's question. She said, if you already had a PPP loan that was pending, do you need to apply now? There are more funds. Your existing application's fine, but you should make sure your bank has the resources, Karen, to actually put forward the loan. Some people have gone to other banks, smaller banks or community banks, to make sure that loan gets processed. You're not going to qualify for two, but at least you know your funds are being processed. Well, that'll do it for the broadcast. Man, we covered a lot of topics today. Legislation in Washington, the PPP loans and stimulus, Iran, the FBI. That's what we do on this broadcast and talk about the work of the ACLJ. Support our work if you're able. ACLJ.org for the matching challenge. We will talk to you on the broadcast tomorrow, everybody. Have a good day. Stay safe.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.